From NPR News, this is Weekend Edition. I'm Leanne Hansen. Over the past quarter century, novelist Anne Rice has spun supernatural tales of vampires, witches, and ghosts, often set in her native New Orleans. Rice gained fame in 1976 with Interview with the Vampire, the first volume of her Vampire Chronicles. The book introduced Lestat, a Louisiana aristocrat made immortal by a vampire's kiss. Anne Rice still writes about Lestat, the so-called brat prince of vampires. She reads from her new novel, Blood Canticle.
I'm the vampire Lestat, the most potent and lovable vampire ever created. A supernatural knockout, 200 years old, but fixed forever in the form of a 20-year-old male with features and figure you'd die for, and just might. I'm endlessly resourceful and undeniably charming. Death, disease, time, gravity, they mean nothing to me. Only two things are my enemy. Daylight, because it renders me completely lifeless and vulnerable to the burning rays of the sun, and conscience. In other words, I'm a condemned inhabitant of eternal night and an eternally tormented bloodseeker. Doesn't that make me sound irresistible?
Anne Rice lives and works in a stately Greek Revival mansion in the Garden District of New Orleans. The antebellum house is bordered by a lush garden with soaring oaks. The grounds are surrounded by a black wrought iron fence. Ornate antiques and religious sculptures decorate the interior of the house. There's also an Otis elevator installed by a previous owner. In another passage from Blood Canticle, Anne Rice describes her home's double parlor.
Quite a room. Soaring mirrors over twin fireplaces of white marble. Mirrors at each end, multiplying the long shadowy chamber and its chandeliers into infinity. Aubusson carpets, are they not? And the scattered furniture, both common and fine, violating the built-in division of the rooms, with a great gathering area of couch and chairs beneath the central arch. And beyond, the long black Bösendorfer piano beneath a genteel veil of dust.
Anne Rice takes a novelist's liberties with her own home. No dust gathers in this immaculate house, where she has lived for 15 years, most of that time with her late husband, the poet and painter Stan Rice. Sitting on a gold satin sofa piled high with embroidered pillows, Rice describes her passion for her home.
I find this house beautiful, and I find it challenging, and I fell in love with it, and took on the challenge. It's huge. It's old. It was built in 1856. It has legends. It has ghosts.
Really?
Oh, yes, apparently. I don't see them, but other people have seen them.
Ghosts of whom?
Well, they say there's a ghost of Pamela Starr Clapp. She was the lady who got these mirrors. They were a wedding present for her in the 1860s. And she was very young at that time when she married Dr. Clapp. And she didn't die till about 1930. And she installed the Otis elevator. Mm-hmm. I mean, she lived here a long time, all the way from, you know, post-Civil War prosperity, apparently, with these wedding presents, these mirrors, all the way to being able to do that Otis elevator, which still just takes us upstairs with an incredibly powerful little motor. Huh. But people have claimed to see Pamela here.
Yeah.
I haven't seen her. Maybe she's happy with what we've done. I don't know.
Any other spirits haunting the place?
Well, the man who bought this house in the very beginning, who had it built, supposedly he committed suicide at the foot of the steps because he was going to lose the house. So this house has been associated with misfortune.
Hmm. As we sit and talk in the double parlor, and your little tabby cat has been making mm-hmm. a few appearances as we talk, is that one of your late husband Stan's paintings?
Yes.
Above the
yes.
sideboard?
That's his painting, and that one there, and that one over there.
Describe the one that we see immediately on the sideboard between the two lamps.
You know, Stan never told you really what a painting meant or what it was, but as I see it, it's some sort of community of wonderfully diverse people. And, of course, there's the joyful little child eating ice cream. And the child is happy eating ice cream. And the king is happy. And all those things hovering behind can't harm him.
Hmm.
That's how I see it. But I don't know how Stan would have described it.
How many cats do you have?
Seven.
Oh, well, three of them have decided to come and check us out,
yeah.
haven't they?
Yeah, they're all Siberian cats, and they're wonderful cats.
And they're very quiet.
They are quiet. They live a silent life, but they are very intelligent. Mm.
This must be a difficult period for you because it's been just, what, a little over a year since your husband died.
It's not quite a year
yet.
It'll be a year December 9th.
In December. Mm-hmm. And you had finished the book just before he died.
Right, in October.
And he was in his house, in this house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was. When I finished the book, I think he was still able to work in his studio. He was probably up on the third floor painting. He painted until he couldn't lift his head anymore. His whole left side was paralyzed. They had him strapped in the wheelchair because he lost the ability to sit up straight. And then finally he lost the ability to hold his head up. Mm. All this from the brain tumor. And he was still tied up there, figuring some way to tie his head, get it up so he could paint. He painted three paintings after the diagnosis. He died in less than 4 months.
Mm. Yeah.
Finding out that he had the tumor.
Have you dreamt about him?
I don't think I have.
I wondered about that. Because of there is a scene in Blood Canticle where one of your characters say, if you dream about the dead, particularly one who was beloved, and he or she is smiling,
mm-hmm.
it means that she's in heaven. And I've right. heard various stories. And I wondered if his paintings are still in his house. Is the presence still here? Is Stan still a part of this house?
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. You know, we were very independent of each other in many respects. And I'm not sure that his presence is that strong in this house. There's something overwhelming about this house itself. It can absorb anything. It can absorb any tragedy that happens and go on being itself. You know, I want to bring people into it. I wish people could come and see it. I tried years ago to have free tours, but the city came and said, you can't do that.
Huh.
You can't do it.
The neighbors complained.
Apparently, yes. But I felt it was an obligation to show people this house. People come to the Garden District, tourists come. I thought they should see the interior. Why not? Let them see it.
A grand staircase dominates the entry foyer, but naturally, we took the elevator for our tour.
What beautiful paintings
isn't
in here,
it nice?
Though.
Yeah. It's done by a very nice man. He likes to paint stuff like this. He did the ceiling beautifully, too. I was very pleased. Oh, I see my sister changed the light. My sister goes around putting these crystal light fixtures everywhere. It really helps. Let me just open
and
this
we
door.
Have arrived.
And there we are on the second floor.
Now, you were known to scribble sayings on your wall.
I was. These walls
Sharpies?
Were covered. They were covered with writing, but now they're not. And other things are accumulating. My books is always everywhere. But my kiddies go in and out, and I work right there on the computer. Mm-hmm. Keyboard is tucked underneath so the kiddies can't dance on it when I'm not here. And this is my place of work. The great convenience of this office is the fact that it goes right into my bedroom. See?
Oh.
Yeah, I'm going to open the door.
Oh,
see,
how
I can
beautiful.
Leave my work behind and just come in here, or I can go in there in my flannel nightgown and work. I do a lot of writing in a flannel nightgown. Barefoot. I carpeted everything so I could go barefoot.
The carpet is quite sumptuous. Yeah. I can feel it. Beautiful blue walls with the mm-hmm. pink trim and that wreath of flowers around your ceiling fan.
Yeah, the wreath of flowers was done by the man who did the elevator paintings, too.
Oh.
He did that on canvas. He went to a cabin, I believe, and worked on it and finished it, and then he came and put it up.
You have quite a few religious statues throughout
I do.
The house.
I do.
Madonna.
I love
in
that
your bedroom.
Black Madonna. That's a new statue. Anybody can buy that. I got that from a dealer, I think in Miami. I'm not sure. We buy from them and we buy from someone in the Philippines. And we get wonderful saints. I have a beautiful statue of the Sacred Heart that I think came from the Philippines.
Ah.
And I love it. I love the complexion. on Jesus and the eyes. And these are just common devotional things that people can buy, you know. Now, this one over here, this statue of the
Black Madonna. Anne Rice moved through her bedroom where the Black Madonna statue stands next to a large flat-screen television. Just off the bedroom, facing the side garden, is a glassed-in porch.
It was open when I bought the house. I put up the glass, but it can be taken down if someone wants to restore the house to pristine shape, all the glass. But it's a great place to get the light.
Yeah, it's beautiful at this time.
It's just lovely. Day. Yeah, I'm not using it to good advantage right now. I had been writing at the beach, my beach place in Florida, and I didn't finish my book, and I had to bring home all my research materials, and they're dumped out there. Mm-hmm. So that's the writing on the wall of the present moment.
And the office is always there waiting for you, isn't it?
Right, it is.
You can close the door.
And Stan did that painting of me years and years ago. He did that painting, I don't know, 1991, 92. Oh. And he gave that to me. And those are pages from my novel, glued all over.
Oh.
And it's sort of a, you know, it sort of has this humor in it, you can see.
Yeah, there's a large, figure of yourself in the lower right-hand corner, and then at the upper corner there's a picture of that large figure of yourself. And those are the novel pages.
Yes, those are pages out of one of the paperback editions that he just pasted there.
And I can't help but notice the rather large crucifix that when you look up from your computer, there's no missing it, is there?
No, there isn't. It was found by Stan in, what we used to call a junk shop, in the French Quarter, but it was filled with high-priced junk. And he came home and asked me, he said, will this offend your family if I buy this and put it in the den? And I said, no, I don't think so at all. So he bought, I said, rescue it, you know, get it out of the junk store. So he bought it and brought it home. And for years it was in the den, and it deteriorated badly. And so I asked a man to paint it the way it is now. As you can see, it's what a lot of people would call lurid, but those are the type of artifacts are devotional statues that I like, you know. I wish it had been, if anything, more true to what had happened at the crucifixion.
More agony.
Absolutely, but I accepted the paint job, and I instructed him to do the complexion dark. I said, we're talking about a Jew of the first century with, rich Semitic heritage. Make him look like that. Mm-hmm. You don't want an Aryan from outer space to be Jesus.
And so you look up from your computer, and that's
what
you see.
You do, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Back downstairs, seated again in the double parlor, Anne Rice explains the inspiration for the vampire Lestat, whom she almost called Leston.
I made a mistake. I thought I was using an old Louisiana name, but later I found out the name is Leston, L-E-S-T-A-N.
Leston.
Which would mean the Stan, my husband.
That is the second question, is in many ways Lestat inspired by your late husband?
He was indeed. He was. Mm-hmm.
In what ways?
Well, when I wrote An Interview with the Vampire, I identified totally with Louis, the passive one, who could not deal with a life without a belief in God and a redemptive framework. And Lestat was the epitome of my husband, the atheist, the rational one, the one who said, we are what we are, we do what we do. I got from him that spirit that infused the character of Lestat. And I even physically described him as Stan was at that time, 6 feet tall, with long blonde hair, which Stan had, very full Buffalo Bill type hair, and his hands, everything, his feline movements, all of that was Stan.
That book was written after the death of your first child from leukemia, childhood leukemia, when she
was
five.
Yes,
four.
It was. Mm-hmm. Mm. Right afterwards.
Yeah. You had said that when you wrote that book that there was no God. What about now?
I believe there is a God. I believe that he will and can intervene at times, but that most of the time he does not. And that things that are unfolding do have meanings. My return to the Catholic Church was a very emotional one. It happened in 1998, after 30 years of being away. I wanted to return to communion. I wanted to return. I wanted to receive the Lord, and I believed that the miracle took place when the priest said the words, "This is my body, this is my blood." And Stan agreed to marry me in the church. And that happened in December of 98. But there is in me a terrible fear that life is meaningless. And that's what Stan believed. And that's what he believed, as far as I know, right up until he died. But I don't think he discovered after death that it was meaningless. I think he discovered something else.
And that's the mystery of it, because he can't tell you.
Well, he can't tell me, but a very interesting thing happened. I did a reading with John Edward by phone. And John,
The psychic.
I know John Edward. And he spoke of Stan in the third person, he is, so forth and so on. And the things that he told me in that reading could only have come from Stan. And he told me just precious information about Stan and where Stan was at. And basically, it was proof of the hereafter. The one thing I can say that he said, which really bowled me over, was, Stan was never able to find a place in the world you created. And it was absolutely the truth. And that reading was a very potent and astonishing thing for me. I wonder why my heart doesn't like totally embrace it and say, he's there, he's happy, he's talked to me, he's all right. I understand how the apostles could see Jesus walking on water and still doubt things, because this happens to you and you believe it completely, but then your rational mind says the next day, it probably wasn't that way. He probably is gone. I mean, there's probably no hereafter. There's probably nothing. Do you know what I mean? It's hard to believe in the miracle you witnessed. As Luke says in the parable about Lazarus and the rich man, if they don't believe Moses and the prophets, they wouldn't believe if a man rose from the dead. And they didn't, and they don't.
Anne Rice, her new novel, Blood Canticle, The Vampire Chronicles, is published by Knopf. Mrs. Rice, thank you so much for inviting us into your home.
Oh, please call me Anne, and I am delighted to have you.
Our profile of Anne Rice was recorded by Manoli Wetherill and produced by Neil Carruth. To see pictures of Anne Rice's home and to hear an extended version of the interview, please visit our website at npr.org.